So in the last time we were discussing this point of asaktir anavishvanga putradara grihadishu. So I was quoting from many of the letters of Srila Prabhupada about householder life and why Lord Krishna says about asakti rana vishvanga putradara grihadishu. That he says freedom from the entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest. So I want to continue this theme for some more time, as it is very vital and important for one's practical life. In the last class we were discussing many of the letters of Srila Prabhupada which he wrote to his disciples. The sum and substance of the discussion was that in majority of the letters Srila Prabhupada was writing, in all the letters, especially that one letter, do you remember? I was telling, one disciple wrote to Prabhupada saying that, "Prabhupada, I have been always trained in the temple that hitvatma patam grihamanda kupam. Family life is, you know, it's like a deep dark well. So now that I am married, I am not able to show proper affection for the family members," he wrote. So Prabhupada in turn, what he said? He said, when husband and wife are Krishna conscious, and that is Vaikuntha. So then Prabhupada explained properly in that letter. So our main focus in the last lecture was how when husband and wife and man and woman, they come together, if they are Krishna conscious, then home is as good as Vaikuntha, as good as spiritual world. There is no difference between spiritual world and material world. And also I read many letters where Prabhupada says householders are as good as sannyasis if they are engaged in the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I also was quoting some of the letters of Prabhupada where he said, if one has a submissive wife and everything favorable at home and still one is engaged in Krishna consciousness, and Prabhupada says it is better than a brahmachari also. So in conclusion, all those letters are very encouraging, what Prabhupada says about devotee families, how husband and wife, if they perform devotion service together, then their life is not much different from the life of anybody in any other ashram. It's the same. So I was also in between asking the question, why do scriptures talk about somebody leaving everything and taking to vanaprastha sannyas? So many examples we see in Srimad Bhagavatam of Ambarish Maharaj taking vanaprastha, Prachina Barisha taking vanaprastha, Bharat Maharaj, we were quoting Bharat Maharaj example also, So then we were saying that in vanaprastha one should be more devoted, more dedicated than even before totally one becomes devoted, dedicated. But there is one aspect which we didn't touch upon last time, which I feel is very important and relevant to people who are practicing devotion service. Just like in Brahmachari Ashram, there are so many rules and regulations to be followed which are taught. So when brahmacharis join in the study of the scriptures and when they progress, there are many neophyte tendencies and problems that come in the life of a celibate. Like we used to say, fight, neophyte. That's why neophyte, the word fight is there. So there is always quarrels and misunderstanding in neophyte stage. So neo means new and fight means just tendency to fight. So we used to give purport to this word neophyte like that, which means in the early stage of Krishna consciousness, one has the problem of dealing with one another, especially interpersonal relationship problem. And in Brahmacharya Ashram we can see not one or two, there are 50, 60, 70 sometimes, 70 egos put in one room or in one place, so all tussling with one another. So there can be problems. And one has to learn to live in atmosphere like that with many others, with different viewpoints and different likes and dislikes, different tendencies and natures, different habits. Although all of them are doing Krishna consciousness together, still everyone is unique and everyone is not same. So there are certainly problems, and one has to be very tolerant, and one has to be forgiving, one has to have a good behavior, and one has to be humble. If one is not humble, one cannot tolerate living in that situation. When Sohatra Swami came to Pune, once he was telling us a song which he said he wrote when he was a new bhakta in one of the ISKCON temples. He said, "I came to the temple with my new shoes on, and when I went inside to take prasad, the prasad was over. So when prasad was over, I became very fried out. Then I thought I will leave the temple and go back home. When I went out, my shoes were gone." So he says in that song many nice things about how what all troubles one faces when one comes as a new devotee, new bhakta in the temple. So one requires this tolerance, humility, forgiving one another, good behavior. With all these things, when one is ready to struggle in the association of devotees, only then one is able to survive as a temple devotee. One is able to go on like that. Otherwise it's difficult. So, to begin with, I am talking about devotee living in the temple. Now, you all may wonder why, as if Radha Shyam is giving a brahmachari class here, talking about brahmacharis. We are going to talk about both ashrams. We are talking about brahmachari ashram, we are talking about grihastha ashram. But we have to know, sometimes people think of brahmacharis, they have left everything and gone to temple there in Vaikuntha. Yes, the temple atmosphere will be Vaikuntha to the degree to which the residents of a temple they keep themselves very Krishna conscious. The degree they are hearing, chanting, associating with one another with great respect for one another and love for one another, then in that association one's Krishna consciousness will blossom more and more, and it is possible for one to maintain a very nice Vaikuntha atmosphere. What makes a temple is not just the four walls, but the people who live in the temple. That's what makes a temple a temple. Otherwise, there are so many temples. India is actually famous for thousands and thousands of temples. So people come to a temple only because people are looking for a certain atmosphere. So you brahmacharis who have left everything, home and harding and everything, and they have come to temple, and there they can have some clashes with one another, or sometimes they can have hankerings in their heart, and such problems can exist in the neophyte stage. And as one progresses, gradually these anarthas have to go away from the heart. One should be ready to go on working over these anarthas and gradually removing them, eliminating them. They will not go away overnight. One has to be very patient. So whatever problems we see in the world, these problems exist in everyone's life, even after becoming a devotee. It's not that after becoming a devotee everything suddenly vanishes and immediately you are like Narada Muni. That doesn't happen. Sometimes we do Narada Muni's role in dramas. It's more easy to play. But if you have to be like a devotee, it's not very easy. So sometimes we used to joke how one devotee becomes angry with another devotee. Haribol! So what are you doing? So Haribol, they say with the mouth, but they are angry with other devotee. Even in a person who has given up everything, he has lot of homework to do in purifying his heart and living in such association and tolerating. And then gradually one is very patient and tolerant, and then one makes progress gradually. Sure enough, the anarthas will gradually vanish. In the same manner, it is also very important to explain, although we said all the different things about how one's grihastha ashram can be turned into a Vaikuntha, one has to also know the practical reality of the grihastha ashram. Sometimes you will find Srila Prabhupada's purports apparently contradictory. In one place, Prabhupada says, householder, husband and wife who live a Krishna conscious life, their home becomes Vaikuntha. And then Prabhupada in another place will say, the Grihastha, he doesn't say Grihamedi, sometimes he says even Grihastha, he says sometimes it's like Hitvatma Patam Grihamanda Kupam, Prabhupada says in certain places like that. So it may apparently be contradictory, but there are various reasons for this. Why Srila Prabhupada says like that? Because we, although have an ardent desire to become Krishna conscious, we many times we glide down to lower consciousness, material consciousness. We go up and we remain in Krishna consciousness for some time, then again we come down. And when our consciousness comes down, there are varieties of problems that arise. In any ashram, whether it's Brahmacharya ashram or Grihastha ashram, in every ashram there are problems. And one does not maintain that spiritual consciousness. There is a verse in Bhagavad Gita which says, Mamchi Abhya Bicharena Bhakti Yogena Sevate Savanan Samaditetan Brahmabhuaya Kalpate. So this verse says how one has to stand above the three modes, Mamchi Abhya Bicharena Bhakti, one should do. And then one without falling down, when one practices nicely, then one goes back to spiritual world. So now, in married life, if you take for example, I was hearing one of the lectures of Swami Radhakrishna Swami Maharaj, which is a very thought-provoking lecture. I don't exactly remember the title. I think it is something to the effect of conflicts in Grihastha Ashram. He gave a series of lectures from the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is one of the lectures which is very deep and profound. I think it's in volume 82 or something. Volume 82, last lecture. For Grihastha, it would be a very wonderful lecture. Some portion of it, whatever comes to my mind, I would like to speak today. And it is very relevant. So there he says how when man and woman come together, the spirit behind marriage is a great responsibility. The spirit behind marriage is Krishna consciousness. Like somebody was asking a question, for marriages should we spend lot of money and conduct a marriage, or should we conduct marriage in a very simple way, just go to the temple, exchange garland, and then offer some service to devotees and then finish the marriage? So it's very difficult to answer question, isn't it? Because if you say do the marriage very simply, some devotees may become offended. Or if you say, yes, devotee's marriage should be done very gorgeously, then others may think, how can we conduct such a big marriage? So instead, Maharaj was telling in that lecture, the spirit behind marriage, Maharaj said, is to become Krishna conscious. If you see, the Vedic tradition is, any of you know, how many days they would conduct a marriage in the Vedic times approximately? Any of you have been to long marriages? Yeah, 5 days? Yeah, marriage is 5 days to 1 week. It would be a very big celebration. And there are so many rituals and rites to be chanted and performed by both bride and bridegroom. You find it's a very elaborate procedure. Nowadays many people try to cut short the marriages as much as possible. They tell the pujari, we don't mind you giving the full amount of money, but please kindly cut it short, it becomes too long. You have to sit in front of the smoke, burning the eyes and everything. But actually, what is the purpose behind conducting such elaborate marriage? There is a reason. When all the people are called for the marriage and all the mantras are chanted and one actively participates in that, then both husband and wife feel a very great sense of responsibility. That in front of so many people have come together and we are married. And also in front of God, in front of the demigods, in front of the fire, they have taken a vow in front of so many people. So they feel that no matter how much difficulty be there between them, they understand that we have to live together. Because it's a very serious vow that we are making. So it's a serious vow. The Agni Vallam they do, coming around the fire, husband and wife catching the hand and coming around the fire, it's a very serious vow. So the husband is never supposed to give up the wife. And the wife is also similarly supposed to remain chaste throughout her life to the husband. But in the modern times, we find especially it began with the west and now it's coming to the east also. Husband-wife quarrel, culminating in divorce. And in India also it's becoming a very commonplace thing. Everywhere there is divorce now, and it's becoming very common. Generally you will find traditional parents conventionally, no matter how much they quarrel, they may quarrel, I don't say they won't quarrel, they will quarrel but they will not divorce. Sometimes if the quarrel becomes too intense in a home, then the wife probably would go to her parents' home for some time. And after 1 month she will come back. Then everything will be normal. This is very standard generally. And that's a good system. So sometimes separation helps, for some time. And then both of them feel a need for being together with one another, and then they come back. They live together. But both of them would never think of divorcing one another. That's unheard of. That is why there is no word only in Sanskrit for divorce. It's not there. You will not find it. You don't find divorce anywhere in the Bhagavatam, or you don't find it anywhere in the scripture. So, in countries like United States and other places, nowadays they have something called as cohabitation, living together. Living together. This living together concept is coming to India also. In one of our colleges in Pune, they had a debate competition where the topic was living together, is it alright or not alright? That was the topic in the colleges. That means Indians are also considering this. So why they are considering this? Because they feel, why to undergo all this trouble of getting married to one another and spending so much of money, and then afterwards if one has to divorce, sometimes there is such a serious problem. One has to go to the court and it takes several months and so much of heart-burning quarrel and everything. And instead of all these hurdles, it's better that you live together with someone, and then if you don't like, then you leave that person and live with somebody else. And then go on changing partners like this. Not much different from what the dogs do. That's what human being thinks. He can go on like that. It's coming in many countries and Indians are considering it now. So, because they do not know that marriage is a sacred vow. For ultimately Krishna, becoming Krishna conscious. That's the meaning of marriage. So now why husband and wife should divorce like that? What is the reason? The same people who loved one another so much, why should they give up each other's company like that? There is a reason. Because if the attraction was based on superficial bodily attraction, that will not last long. The material side of life is always miserable in this world. Even if one becomes a devotee, it is not that the miseries of the world will vanish. The miseries of the world will continue to exist, only we will get the strength to face them. As long as, for example, a devotee is facing misery in his life, a non-devotee is facing misery in his life. What is the difference? A devotee sees that this misery is given by Krishna to purify me. Krishna is giving me this misery to purify me. So he is seeing it with a very positive attitude. Whereas a non-devotee considers misery to be a big obstacle in his sense gratification. Then he becomes restless and wants to take some quick action. And that action can be damaging to oneself and others and society in all respects, in many ways. So, as long as material sense gratification is the goal between two people, inevitably it will end in quarrel. There is absolutely no doubt about that. But the material world is so created that sometimes before marriage, man and woman are attracted to one another in a very great way. But then eventually when they come together, they see the harsh side of material reality. So I was telling about Brahmacharya Ashram. Brahmacharya Ashram is the same thing. If Brahmacharis don't see one another as spiritual beings, it is said we are not human beings with spiritual experience, we are spiritual beings with human experience. That means we are spiritual beings sometimes in a human body, sometimes in a cat's body, dog's body. The Vedas consider that potentially everyone is divine. No one is bad. Everyone is good. Potentially everyone is divine. But if you find something bad in someone, that is a temporary phase of impurity that is going on, which will eventually be washed off. Because ultimately everyone is good. Everyone belongs to the spiritual world. This is spiritual understanding. But the material understanding is, everyone is simply made up of atoms and molecules. That's what scientists think about. So material understanding means you see only the body. I am this body and he or she is that body. So that kind of material outlook to life will inevitably lead one to frustration. There is no doubt about that. That's the reason, because they don't see marriage as a sacred vow. God is not in the center. And they have not taken blessings of the superiors, they have not taken blessings of the society, relatives, friends. They simply come together simply for enjoyment. Then that leads to problem. Now, in a family life, that is not the only problem. Even if husband and wife get married and they learn to live together over a period of time, tolerating one another, then there are children, like Anga Maharaj, he got a child, Vena. Actually, when he wanted a son, the Brahmanas told him that according to the horoscope, we can say that you don't deserve to have a son. But still, if you want to have a son, we can make some arrangement, they said. See, the sufferings are such that you can't escape them in this world. You can agree to accept one suffering in a different form. But the quantum of suffering cannot be changed. That has to be experienced. So now Anga Maharaj did not want to suffer without a son. He wanted a son. So they told him, okay, you will have a son, but the son will be the cause of your suffering. See, whatever suffering he got without having a son, he will get it with having a son. But suffering will be the same. So Brahmanas did some yajna and they gave the fruits of yajna to Anga's wife. And then he got a son. He was very happy that he could get a child. But then this Vena was very, very naughty and very mischievous. He would go to the forest and kill all the animals, even as a small boy. And he would even sometimes, with the same weapons, kill the other children in the neighborhood. So it was very difficult to control by anybody. And Anga severely punished him in order to teach him good lessons. But those punishments were of no avail. And Vena continued to behave in the same way. Then Anga very severely regretted. He said, there are so many people who have no sons, they are more fortunate than me. I am having a son, Chanakya says, no? He says, what is the use of having a son who is not a pandita or who is not a devotee, who is not learned or one who is not a devotee? What is the use of having a son? Such a son becomes a burden. So he was lamenting like that. But then, because Anga was a devotee of the Lord, he got a very deep realization. He came to the conclusion, no, I should not think in this way, that by having a son I am unfortunate. In fact, he said to himself, by having a bad son I have become very fortunate. He said, why? Because having a bad son has led me to detachment. Now I don't want to live a material life anymore in this world. So thinking like this, he got up in the middle of the night and he left to the forest. And he left everything and he surrendered to Krishna completely. So he took a very negative situation and turned into a very positive situation. Although his son was the cause of his so much of mental suffering, because he was an ideal father, ideal king. Now for such an ideal king to have such a naughty son who is bringing infamy to home and country and causing trouble to the praja, how much painful it must be. So he tolerated, Anga tolerated all that. At last he got detached and he entered the forest in this way. So similarly, in Grihastha Ashram, in a family, one has to tolerate the son who is not submissive to the parents and who wants to act whimsically on his own. One who thinks he knows, but he does not know anything. He doesn't have any wisdom. So one has to tolerate that. Similarly, one has to, when one begets a daughter, then naturally one has to get her married safely. She should not go in the path of irreligion, or she should not be exploited by anyone. There is a great amount of anxiety. Besides this, also Chanakya says, Rupavati Bharya Shatru. He says, if one has a beautiful wife, and if she keeps the husband absorbed in the worldly activities only, and does not allow him to advance in Krishna consciousness, then even she can become an enemy. for the husband. There are many men who may be wonderful devotees, but their wives are not devotees. Sometimes they marry a materialist wife. And in this way, ultimately, one's Krishna consciousness is finished. But if one is fortunate, then one will be able to be married to someone who, in a family where husband and wife both are devotees, then one may advance. One of the greatest things that causes suffering in home is the ego, which I was talking about in the beginning. So there are two egos to be staying at the same place together. So the male has the ego that I am working so hard and I am bringing so much of hard and wealth home. And naturally there is a lot of heart burnings in the office and in business. And then one wants some kind of vent to that. And when one comes home, one wants to be appreciated, one wants to be recognized and thanked. But when one finds, on the other hand, the woman at home does no less. Like she has to do all the washing of the clothes, she has to do all the cooking, raising the children is not a joke. You know how difficult it is to raise one small child. So when she does all these things, then suddenly she feels that nobody is watching what I am doing. Nobody even recognizes and says one word. So there is a mutual expectation from one another, from husband and wife. Both parties have expectation, high level of expectation. And when both the people don't fulfill each other's expectation, then again the relationship becomes very delicate. There is a cold war sometimes. Cold war is so, it's like walking on hot coal. Cold war is such that any time a fight may break out. One's relationship can become like this. I'm talking about a family which is not rooted in devotional service. So when there is material connection, material relationship, these are very common. These are very, very common. And to the degree one wants to fan the ego and wants to safely preserve it, false ego, to that degree the problems will be of bigger and bigger magnitude. In this way, the family life becomes like a life full of thorns and pebbles, and one has to walk through it with great difficulty, and one has to suffer it. That's why some people feel the best is to give up such a family life and be separated through divorce or something like that. Some people do that. So living in such a life and tolerating one another, understanding the, actually tolerating one another comes when we are not fully spiritually conscious. So which is the most often the case? Like all of us, we are all progressing devotees. So naturally, we are not very advanced, we have not yet become completely purified. So there are many misconceptions and misunderstandings and ego problems we have. So when you have to live, whether a brahmachari in the ashram or a grihastha in family life, unless one is tolerant, one is forgiving, one is endeavoring to cultivate good behavior, good habits, all these things, one cannot continue. It's very difficult. Actually, we can hurt one another again and again by repeatedly quarreling, which some people do. They know they should not do, they still do. And they go on with that. And they are determined to fight till the last breath. They are not ready to change. We will die the last, living the last breath by justifying what I believe in. So there is no end to that. So, in this way, there are two ways to get purified. Either one goes to brahmachari life or one goes to grihastha life. So here, Krishna is saying, asakti ranabhishvanga putra dharagrihadishu. Prabhupada writes the same in many of his letters. If the householder life is not favoring one's Krishna consciousness, is not favorable to one's Krishna consciousness, then one should not cling on to that family simply for the sake of taking care of them, living with them, if the household life is not favorable. For example, Prabhupada's wife wasn't favorable at one time. She was a kind of pious lady, but she was more interested in her mundane piety. And Prabhupada had a different program. He wanted to preach. He wanted to call all the neighbors and friends and everyone, and every morning he wanted to give a Bhagavatam class. And he wanted his wife to cooperate, assist in that. And Prabhupada thought, she will assist me in everything. and I can preach nicely. But she had absolutely no interest. So on one occasion Prabhupada asked her, she was eating some biscuits and drinking tea. And Prabhupada asked her, you want me or you want tea? So she said, oh, I am happy with tea. And Prabhupada decided, now it's time for me to leave. Then it becomes a hitvatma patam grihamanda gopam. Then the household life becomes unfavorable for one's devotional service. When everyone in the house want to be simply materialistic, when wife, children, family members, everyone. So Prabhupada writes in one of his letters, he says that when the householder life is not favoring one's Krishna consciousness and not helping one in making progress in Krishna consciousness, rather pulling one down, like we see, one can expand one's material life or one can expand one's spiritual life. And one has the choice in one's hands. Everyone is given a choice in this world. Sometimes we may be tricked by Maya that we want to have enough security in life to expand our material life so that we can safely practice Krishna consciousness without any difficulty. But in the course of securing one's material needs to stabilize one's life, one may get lost in that and one may not be able to come back to Krishna. Somewhat like the Tolstoy's story, you know. Tolstoy says how one man wanted some land. He went to a Jamindar who agreed to give him some land in donation. So Jamindar told him, this man asked, how much can I take? Jamindar said, as much as you want to take, you can take. As far as our eyes can see up to the horizon, all that is my land only. He said, you run and then evening you have to come back by sunset. Whatever land you are able to run and procure, that much land will be yours. And you don't have to pay me a single penny. So this boy ran and ran and ran. Even after noon, he continued running. Up to 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock. Out of greed, he went on in one direction. Now he wanted to come back. So he was coming back, he ran so fast, in the midway, he was foaming in the mouth and he died. So he got nothing. In same way, sometimes one may get lost in stabilizing one's material needs. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada always puts this condition in his letters. As long as husband and wife are coming together for the sake of propagating the mission of Krishna consciousness, there will be a Vaikuntha atmosphere, they will be happy. Again, it's not that there will be no suffering in life. It will be Vaikuntha only. Sufferings will be there, sufferings will come even after we become devotees. But Krishna will give us the strength to face them. Krishna will surely, we will be able to take shelter of Krishna in that suffering, if you are Krishna conscious. And between husband and wife, there is Radha and Krishna, divine couple. Because of that, they will find one another ever fresh and ever sweet, always. Same thing with brahmacharis also. Between one brahmachari and another, they find the other person to be a wonderful flower like Vaishnava, who is always Krishna conscious and he appreciates all the devotees when he sees Krishna in between. As soon as the relationship becomes material, we have practically seen how when people see from material point of view, material skills, material talents, material weaknesses, when those things are highlighted, then immediately there is comparison, unhealthy comparison, and then it leads to a lot of heart-burning, grievances and everything. So this was one of the points I wanted to emphasize, which I didn't speak in the last lecture. So, in any ashram, one has to undergo the difficulties. But here Krishna specifically says, one should give up these things, asakti rana bhishvanga putra dala grihadishu. And what is essentially meant here is, one should give up that spirit of going on accumulating more and more and quarreling with one another and spending one's life in this material world without any aim. One should not live in such a life. So one should give up such a atmosphere where one is stunted in his growth of Krishna consciousness. That's the main point. But great devotees like Ambarish Maharaj, even though they were not stunted in their growth, when they became 60 and Panchashivurdham Vanam Vrajet, they followed the formula that when they came to the stage of retirement, then husband and wife, they both take to the Vanaprastha order and they wholeheartedly devote their consciousness in Krishna. The Vedic life is very, very well planned. In the old age, people are treated with great warmth and great respect. You can see practical example, how Yudhishthira Maharaj is treating Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. You can see from Srimad Bhagavatam. With so much of love, so much of affection and respect, he treated him. Although Dhritarashtra was the cause of the Pandava's suffering, which Dhritarashtra was doing through Duryodhana and other Kauravas, and Yudhishthira knew that very well. And Yudhishthira felt, it is not that Dhritarashtra hates us, but it is due to his attachment to Duryodhana, you know, he was unable to control his Kaurava sons in doing all that. But even after all the Kauravas were destroyed, still Dhritarashtra was left behind, and Pandavas loved and respected him so much. So Prabhupada says, how in old age one should be able to peacefully leave this world and go back home, back to Godhead. And one should not be taking all the tensions and worries and anxieties of the family life, which is often the mistake that many people do in this world. Because I have seen many of my relatives and everyone, people even after they become great-grandfathers. Great-grandfather means they have a son, and son has a son, and one more son, right? Yeah, one more son. Yeah. Because in Vedic type of marriages, the marriages happen very early, you know. So they have sometimes great-grandson also, sometimes. You find that. Sometimes they see the great-grandson getting married also. You can see that. Because they marry early. And so sometimes people continue their... So Prabhupada talks about the Dhritarashtra there. How there are so many Dhritarashtras. So that type of attachment is condemned here. That is, one is simply dutifully waking up in the morning, filling up the water in the buckets for all the family members to take bath. Many people do very... I don't say they shouldn't do. Otherwise Mataji will be angry. Sarada Shampu is telling men not to work at home. Actually, husband and wife, they both have to work if the house has to run. Everyone has their duty. But one should not spend their entire life simply kutumba parneenava. That should not be the only goal of life. But family means it's like a factory. Prabhupada says, running a family is more difficult than running an empire. He says, it's even more difficult. You may wonder how, it's a small house, only one husband, one wife, and maybe one or two children. How can it be so difficult to run a home? How can it be said to be difficult than running an empire? It becomes difficult because of the egos of the different people living in the family. Because of the likes and dislikes of, different likes and dislikes, different interests, different wants, different needs, different demands, different expectations. Because of all these things, the management of home becomes highly complex. Should one perform the struggle till the fag end of life and without developing one's Krishna consciousness? That is why at a certain age the Vanaprastha life is kept. Vanaprastha life for full focus on Krishna service without having to take any more anxieties. And that life is a very simple life. It's a very life of austerity and penances. And simple life. And there are so many examples in Srimad Bhagavatam to show that. And sometimes a husband may take sannyas after the vanapras. When Dhritarashtra is going to forest, Gandhari is just following him. Just behind him, she goes with him. When Dhritarashtra evokes the fire from within his body through mystic agneya, and then burns his body, the whole cottage is burnt, and Gandhari enters into it. Similarly, you find Prithu and Archi also. Similarly, you find Malayadvaja and his wife. There are many examples in Bhagavatam. How wife just follows the path of the husband, and the husband is simply aiming at spiritual life, especially as he ages. And in certain cases you find Prachana Parishit, for example. Even before the Pachetas returned, he went to the forest. Narada Muni's inspiration is very powerful. Very, very powerful. He ran to the forest. Similarly, Prabhupada talks about Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj's father, Uttanapada. So he wanted to, he didn't wait for his son's marriage to happen, Prabhupada is saying. He went to the forest. His son's marriage is not an important thing. Some people consider that to be the highest goal of life. Getting the sons and daughters married and settling them in life, that's a very big responsibility. Yes, it is a responsibility, but that is not a responsibility that is beyond one's spiritual goal. So Uttanapada didn't remain for Dhruva's marriage to happen. Prabhupada says in one of the purports, he proceeded to forest. He thought that emancipation or salvation for himself was very important. So he went to forest. So from these examples, what we learn? We learn that one should understand the spirit behind what is being spoken here. That the spiritual goal should be the center of one's life. And one's consciousness should be such that one should be ever ready to go to Krishna and not be bound by different ties. Like we hear in the story of Kailash, isn't it? Sometimes our students put up the story of Kailash, the drama. And when I ask them the morals from that story, one of the morals which all the boys would say, can you guess what? One of the first morals they would extract from the story. They would say Kailash was attached. They would say that Kailash was simply attached, that's why he had to take bodies again and again. And every time I see the boys put up drama, they would say, so I used to ask them one question, do you think one should not fulfill one's responsibilities to home? Is that attachment? Isn't it? Like you are saying, Kailash is attached. He was attached to, you know, taking care of the money of the home. He was attached to taking care of his son, because sons were foolish. So he had to stay back at home and guide them and everything. So do you think Kailash is doing anything wrong? Shastras are so much strongly stressing on performance of duty. Taking care of one's wife, children and family members is a part of one's duty. It's vital, very important duty, especially for someone married. How can you say Kailash was attached? He was perfectly doing his duty. Anybody knows? So when the, like Divyadev was saying, when the material life becomes so big, material part of our life becomes so big, that spiritual life has no place. Then it is attachment. That our material life is so much expanding at the cost of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is choked. Then that is called attachment. That is material attachment. That's what was happening to Kailash. So, undoubtedly, one has duties to perform for all these people. In fact, the Vedic life is very strongly emphasizing on not foregoing one's duty towards the family members. So in that sense, getting sons and daughters married and settling them in life, giving them the necessary things and everything, handing over all the charge to younger ones, these are all a part of life, essential. But one has to do all these things without getting entangled. The material life is so great that one can very easily get entangled. Just like that story of that monkey, you know, who saw a tar in the tin and he put his one hand and another hand and one leg and another leg and put the stomach and everything got stuck up. So one can get thoroughly stuck up in the family. It's very easy. Because the things are all designed like that. It's so powerfully designed. So the attraction between man and woman in the beginning itself forms a bondage, due to which one expands the material life. And then subsequently the attraction to the children, as Prahlad Maharaj says, and attachment to one's home, attachment to one's things. In this way, one's attachments multiply and more and more and more. So, one has to always keep oneself aloof in consciousness, even while being surrounded by all kinds of allurements, to keep a person bound. So he says, asaktir anavishvanga putradaragdhadishu. All these things.
Can you elaborate? Now here, we see from a husband's point of view. If family is not Krishna conscious, husband can see. But if in the family, husband is not, if husband is Krishna conscious, he can see. If husband is not Krishna conscious,
what should the wife do? That's a very important question. Actually, in the 7th canto, there is a verse which says, if a husband is fallen, then wife should not follow the husband. There is something to that effect. There is a verse which says, wife should not follow the path of the husband if husband is fallen or husband is not Krishna conscious. So the Vedic life also, you will see, there are examples to show. if a husband is 100% materialistic, he has absolutely no interest, and he becomes an impediment in the wife's advancement of Krishna consciousness, then sometimes the wife would go to her parents' home. And sometimes going to parents' home helps. And then the husband may agree to make some changes in his life. And again the wife may come back and continue to live. So generally it is said that if even a husband is materialistic, as long as he doesn't put an impediment in the advancement of wife, it is always a safe situation for the wife to live with the husband, even if husband is not a devotee. Why is it so? That is because especially a woman needs protection. When she is a young girl, she needs protection from the father. When she is grown up and married, she needs protection from the husband. And then even in her elderly age, she needs protection from the son. Always she should be protected. Otherwise the world will exploit a woman. Prabhupada is talking to one air hostess, one staff reporter I think. So she was asking question, Swamiji, why you people see, you know, man and woman to be different? Why do you say women are less intelligent, or you are saying that women are lesser, men are better and all that? So then Prabhupada is saying, a young boy, 16-year-old boy can travel in any part of the world. You know. But if it is the same, a girl has to do, there is a lot of danger for her, from all quarters. And Prabhupada is saying to her, she was a small girl, he said, now you are here, if I catch your hair now, what will you do? Prabhupada is asking. You can only cry, can, you will cry. You can't do anything. Because you are a woman, you will need a, if you have a husband, then your husband will, if somebody does anything to you, your husband can beat him up or whatever. So of course some women argue that, now we are also learning karate, that's another thing. But we are talking about gender. There are women weightlifters also, you see. But they are exceptions. We don't want to talk of exceptions. Let's talk of the general rule. General rule is made in such a way that if you compare the body of man and woman, men are physically made stronger. And see, there are some women with man's nature and men with feminist nature also. So those exceptions we are not considering here. We are talking about general, in general. So women are supposed to be protected by man. I have heard from many senior devotees and from Maharaj also that sometimes a man is very materialistic. He is not interested in devotional life. But if wife is a great devotee practicing nicely, as long as the husband allows her to eat prasad and go for the programs and allows her to continue devotional service, one should go on with such a family. Because she needs man's protection. It's very important. Yeah. But sometimes your husband becomes a very great impediment in her Krishna consciousness. He doesn't allow her to go for the programs. He snatches the bead bag and throws it away. And he says that you cannot see devotees, you cannot go to temple. Then sometimes a woman goes home. And she will be crying at home and going to parents. It's very unfortunate. Sometimes it ends up in divorce. Like I've seen families, a devotee girl, you know, and some 12 rounds she was chanting, she married a karmi boy. Because parents wanted to get her married in the same caste. Somehow they got a karmi boy and got her married. And she was really not interested. But they said, no, he'll become a devotee over a period of time, don't worry. They got him married. And then after marriage, that fellow was, he turned out to be like an atheist, absolutely no interest. Then it ended up in divorce. It's very unfortunate. So, wife should certainly try her level best to find out ways and means to not go for divorce as far as possible. But if there are some like barbaric husbands with whom wife cannot do anything, sometimes they have to go for divorce. Like even Prabhupada once was giving a class, entire class Prabhupada gave, and he was talking deadly against divorce. And he got down from the asana, one husband and wife came and sought permission from Prabhupada for taking divorce. And Prabhupada said, yes, okay, you take divorce, he said. Somebody asked Prabhupada, you only gave a class now? You should not take divorce, then how did he allow? Prabhupada said, even if I say don't do it, they are anyway going to do it. Why should I give them instruction which they will break? Then that will become a double offense. So let them, if they want to live in separation, they are not having reasonable expectations from one another. Both are unreasonable. Prabhupada allowed like that. Very unfortunate. But actually, such things are very unfortunate, and one can only one can put one's heart and try one's best to keep the sacred vow of marriage, which is very important. So that's why the marriage is so elaborate in Vedic times, because the husband and wife should understand that it is a sacred bond, it's a religious bond, it is done under the blessing of God, blessing of so many Vaishnavas and everything. Now, sometimes you see in the scripture, it is said, putra dara grihadishu. Mostly it says that the man should do this, man should do that, and then the wife, children, all are put in one lot. The reason is, generally in the Vedic life, the man is supposed to lead the spiritual part of life in a family. The husband is supposed to be very a serious devotee of God and surrender to a guru. And getting regular guidance from guru, and then taking care of the wife, children, family, relatives, friends, everyone, and taking them all ahead in Krishna consciousness. That's how it's supposed to be. And as far as the wife and children are concerned, they have to just follow his path, and they will also attain the same destination. And there are innumerable examples in the scriptures to show how the wife attained the same destination as the husband, simply by serving him. Devahuti served Kardama Muni, and she attained the same destination like him. She became very fortunate. So, whenever any instructions we get or we read such things, the spirit behind the thing is very important. Like, for example, it is not fanatically said that one gives up one's home and leaves the responsibilities and runs away. That is actually condemned in the scriptures. If one has wife and children and one leaves them all at a premature stage and runs away. Sometimes you see even examples. You see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was 24-year-old boy, you know, he left his submissive wife and old mother, affectionate mother. He left both of them and took sannyas. Buddha did that. Buddha also did that. But they are very exceptional cases. Those are not meant for the common people. See, there are rules and there are exceptions to the rule. The general rule is one is supposed to complete all one's responsibility. And then when one comes to the stage of sannyas, panchasya vodham manamrijat, beyond 51 goes to vanaprastha, and at a certain stage one renounces. And Srila Prabhupada, in all his purports, if you see, he did not give so much emphasis on this detachment or renunciation. You will always see Prabhupada stressing on how at all point of time in our life we should keep ourselves Krishna conscious. Prabhupada stresses on these things more. If you see here also, in this purport, what Prabhupada says about this detachment, you can see that. As for detachment from children, wife and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. But when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. See, this is a very deep sentence. He says, but when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. Which means, if, for example, if a man finds that his wife and children are not favorable to Krishna consciousness, he cannot run away from the responsibility also immediately. He should be just not attached to them, which means he should fulfill his responsibilities to them, and while remaining unattached, he should be making progress himself and wait for a time when he can totally leave all these encumbrances. After, like Srila Prabhupada, you can see, he had five sons. They were all very small children in the early stage. And Prabhupada faced many difficulties with his wife. At one time, Prabhupada, there was Second World War going on and bombs were being thrown, and Prabhupada wanted to take all the family members to Mayapur, and his wife wasn't ready to come. She didn't cooperate. So Prabhupada sent all his children there, and he remained with her to take care of her. So he was such a responsible husband. You can see that. It's not that he said, okay, if you are not, coming to Dham, because anytime anything can happen in Calcutta. So he didn't take the children and go away. He was very responsible. And then he saw that the sons were growing bigger. Once they grew up and came to a stage where they could take care of his wife and take care of the family, running of the family, everything, at appropriate time he left. And he took sannyas after that. Yeah. That's what Prabhupada is saying here, that one should not be attached to them. Attached to them means simply becoming a servant of wife and children, and doing anything and everything they will say, and not caring for Krishna consciousness. That can happen to people. Like we say, somebody who is very attached may leave Krishna consciousness sometimes. and completely not show up because they are completely into worldly life. We have seen somebody is a devotee, and when they get sometimes married to a materialistic girl, then you find that she completely takes over the charge of the house and she keeps the husband under control. Husband is ready to leave Krishna also for her and be materialistic. That's condemned here. That's because of attachment. He says that. The best process of making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. If one is in full Krishna consciousness, he can make his home very happy. Because this process of Krishna consciousness is very easy. One need only chant Hare Krishna and accept the remnants of footsteps offered to Krishna. Have some discussion on books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And engage oneself in deity worship. These four things will make one happy. Which means these four spiritual things only will bring you what is really called happiness. And there will be another part of life called misery, which comes with material side. So that will not make us happy. Once you train the members of the family in this way, the family members can sit down morning and evening and chant together, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. If one can mold his family life in this way to develop Krishna consciousness, following these four principles, then there is no need to change from family life to renounced life. See? What purpose? But if it is not congenial, not favorable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. One must sacrifice everything to realize or serve Krishna, just as Arjuna did. Arjuna did not want to kill his family members. But when he understood that these family members were impediments to his Krishna realization, he accepted the instruction of Krishna and fought and killed them. In all cases, one should be detached from the happiness and distress of family life. Because in this world, one can never be fully happy or fully miserable. Yeah. So happiness and misery are mixed in this world, just like a sweet rice mixed with sand. That's the way the world is created. Sometimes we feel happy, sometimes distressed. So Krishna in the second chapter advises Arjuna that you learn to be detached from both. If you are too much elated in happiness, then you will also suffer that much in suffering. So he says, remain aloof from both and only take shelter of Krishna. So this is the instruction of Prabhupada. In all his purports you will find Prabhupada giving more stress on this than just the mere detachment. Of course, one should be constantly improving. In Bhakti Aloka, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, according to one's ashram and according to one's level of advancement that one has made in the ladder of progress, to that degree one should be renounced, he says. For example, somebody in the Shraddha stage has certain things to renounce. Somebody in Anathanivritti or Nishtha stage has more finer things to renounce. And as one goes higher and higher, one has to renounce finer and finer things. For example, there is so much talk going on in Bhagavad Gita to give up the fruitive mentality. Sometimes you wonder, what is the mentality? Can I catch with hand, you know? What is this fruitive mentality? Is it something tangible that we can give up? Some people think, is it only in the mind we should think ultimately everything is God's property? Isn't it? Like, you know, one man used to, you know, take his salary and keep it in the feet of God, you know, and then spend all his salary. So there are people who do like that, say that I have offered to God. Or some people think in the mind, I have to say, oh God, you have given me a good salary, thank you. That's how people think like that. So, it is not just something in the mind. There is also gross and there is also subtle fruity mentality. Grossly also we offer the things to the Lord. But subtly also we give up the doership. I am the doer. I am greatest. This fame is for me. So these are all very subtle things which may be even difficult for us to understand. But as we progress, we can give up. That is why Bhakti Loka, he says, Bhakti Thakur says, as we go higher and higher, we have to renounce subtle and subtler things. So somebody may be living in a home with wife, children, family members and everything. But such a person can make advancement just like a sannyasi makes advancement. Because as I was telling, both these ashrams ultimately come to the point where one walks through the thorns and learns valuable lessons through them. If one learns some lessons while going through the thorny pathway, then he is very fortunate. He will make his spiritual life better. There are some people who don't learn any lessons, rather they become frustrated. And they frustrate others also. they frustrate themselves, frustrate others, and they become angry on Krishna. Sometimes they become weak in their devotional lives. They blame others. In this way, they have a stunted growth, and they don't become purified. When the opportunity is given for us to become purified, if you accept it gratefully, we will become purified. If you blame it, then there is no opportunity. We lose the opportunity. So, material world is a very nice ground for realization, to return back to our real position of being servant of Krishna. Asakti rana bishvanga putra dargadishu nityam cha samachittatvam ishtanishopatishu. That we will discuss next time about the happiness and distress. So the sentence I liked the most in what Maharaj spoke was, the material side of marriage is always miserable, he said. All our yams, material side of marriage is always miserable. It's like some sutra, isn't it? Powerful sutra, no? The material side of marriage is always miserable, he said. So this should be remembered. This is the essence of what I am speaking today. The material side of marriage is miserable, which means we all know what is material side, what is spiritual side, we all know. So you increase the spiritual side, you tune yourself to the spiritual side, that much whole family will be like Vrindavan Dham. It will be like a festival, every day will be a festival, more than a spiritual activities at home. And you increase the material side, it's the Kurukshetra. And there is problem. Varieties of problems spring up. So many injustices are imagined. So many quarrels and ego clashes. Actually, in families you can see people scold one another so strongly. Sometimes there's a cold war, they don't talk to one another. See, not talking or scolding, both are same. Then both are painful. And these are very common in when there is material consciousness. And this is actually material consciousness. So material side of marriage is always miserable. So whenever it becomes miserable, that is actually like a smoke. You know, like the, you know this, what do you call this device? You know, when there's a smoke, immediately it gives alarm, no? Smoke alarm. Smoke alarm, yeah. Similarly, we also can have smoke alarm in our lives. What is it? Whenever the quarrels are increasing, heart burnings are increasing, and both people are quarreling. I'm not only talking about brahmacharis, even I'm talking about brahmacharis also. When you find that the relationships are becoming strained, you know, sparks are coming, you know. That means the material side is increasing more. Immediately it's better for one to withdraw oneself and increase one's spiritual strength. And by doing that one can protect one's consciousness. Otherwise the material side is always miserable. Actually materialistic people, they feel such misery in such relationships. Actually they end up in divorce. It breaks, the relationship breaks. So without breaking, first they have such a strong attachment. And then there is strong detachment. Bhoga and Tyag. You can see that. But devotees of God, actually, they know that material side of life is always miserable. So knowing this fact, they try to spiritualize their consciousness as much as they can, as sincerely as possible. And the nature of spiritual consciousness is such that it is like binding everyone together. I have a personal experience that whenever I have chastised someone, or I have been very upset with someone, Brahmacharya has scolded many times and all. So if I spend some time reading Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting some more rounds, and internalize myself and strengthen my consciousness more, and that helps me and that helps others also. I've seen several times that I don't know how it is, it's a magic that you increase your spiritual consciousness, then you find that that helps you and that helps others also around you. Really it makes it gives a very great benefit to people around you. On the other hand, you try to sort out the problems only by some material techniques. There are so many seminars given nowadays, communication skills and transactional analysis, you know. Many husband wives go for that, to know how to deal with husband and wife, how to see one another. There are so many courses people attend. With all these courses and experiences, you'll find that still the problems persist. They don't evaporate. But if one is rooted in spiritual consciousness, it makes a very big difference. Because actually by becoming more spiritually conscious, our heart is softened and we become more humble and we begin admitting our faults. As soon as we admit our faults, immediately the problems evaporate. It's like the whole problem melts off after that. Otherwise, material endeavor to solve material problems, it only magnifies the problems, it becomes multiplied. Tarang Maharaj says, one solution that you come up with, that leads to a secondary problem, tertiary problem, it just multiplies. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.